You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. After years of working with and for other artists, Australian musician Rod McCormick decided it was finally time to release a project of his own. Rod is my guest on this edition of Americana Music Profiles as we talk about his debut CD, Fingerprints. Hi, Rod. Welcome to the show today.
How are you, Greg?
Good, good. How are you? So we were talking a few minutes ago. You were fresh in the States from Australia. It's a long trip, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it is a long trip. It takes us around about 26 hours door-to-door, pretty much, to get from our home in Australia, which is on the Central Coast, about an hour and a half north of Sydney. And now I'm sitting here in Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, great. How long will you be here?
I'm here for 3 weeks, this visit. I come here quite a lot, and I have been doing so since about 1985 I started coming here.
Okay.
And so I visit quite a lot and come here to do lots of recording and things like that. But, we're here for 3 weeks and really looking forward to heading over to the IBMA Festival.
Yeah, that's great. And I'm not sure when this is going to air, but folks hear this and afterwards and they missed us, we'll make sure that they can find you at the end of the show here. We'll give them a way to get in touch, and hopefully folks will be able to catch you at one of the IBMA showcases as well.
That's
so
great. I hope
yeah.
So.
Yeah. So you are, obviously, as you just mentioned, been traveling back and forth quite a bit for a while. Your career started, I presume, in Australia as a musician, though. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Look, I grew up as a kid in Australia playing, lots of music, lots of acoustic music, folk music and country music. And when I was about 11 years old, my father bought me a banjo and said, look, you're kind of finger-picking the guitar. Maybe you should check this out.
Okay.
And that was really great. But, one of the... He gave me a couple of vinyl albums back then, and one of them happened to be a Carl Jackson five-string banjo record, which is still an incredible piece of work. And so when I heard Carl playing, Foggy Mountain Breakdown and those kind of standard things, plus he'd written a bunch of tunes for that record, it was, that sort of got me hooked in. And then I spent several years just discovering, bluegrass, because the first time I heard Foggy Mountain Breakdown was Carl Jackson playing it, which is an incredible version. But then I wanted to go back and discover, Lester and Earl and, of course, Bill Monroe, and it sort of took me on a backward trip going through, to figure out all of the roots of where bluegrass music came from.
You also have had the opportunity in your career to play with quite a few country musicians as well, though, right?
Yeah, that's true. Look, in Australia, I have a recording studio and I produce a lot of records for people and a lot of Australian artists. And I've also been, as a musician, I play on heaps of records from all over the world. And I guess I was the musical director of the Australian CMA Awards for about 10 years in a row.
Okay.
And so when we'd have a visiting American artist, then I would often get a phone call to say, hey, look, Trisha Yearwood's coming to town, and can you put a band together for her?
Oh, cool.
For instance,
okay.
So I did that with people like Trisha and Leanne Rimes and Pam Tillis and Tracy Lawrence and lots of people like that. And also I've been lucky enough to play in the band for artists like Glen Campbell and some really terrific artists, and really lucky to get to do that stuff. Obviously, you know, they come to Australia and they need to pick up a few musicians, and I was lucky that, you know, I play the guitar and banjo and mandolin and stuff, so would often get the call.
Yeah, yeah. Outside of that, is bluegrass more your kind of music of trade, or will you play all sorts of things too?
Well, look, yeah, I record all sorts of things because that's my studio and that's my job. You know, I produce records in lots of different genres, mainly country, main acoustic and folk music. That's kind of the things that I sort of specialize in. But I also, you know, end up recording and producing things in all sorts of other areas. My daughter actually has just released an album which is in the electronica market, and she's doing really well in LA and doing great. So that was really interesting. But yeah, my absolute love, my real passion lies in acoustic music. That's, you know, I guess that's when I first heard music that, you know, I think we all know that moment where you hear something that's it's totally life-changing and transforming, you know. And for me, that was hearing, you know, New Guys Revival and Tony Rice and those kind of things.
Yeah, yeah. How does the music scenes differ from the States and Australia with regards to the bluegrass industry specifically?
Well, with bluegrass in Australia, we have, you know, we have a very tiny kind of circuit, but it's, you know, country music in Australia is about 6% of our wholesale music market.
Okay.
So you can imagine how small bluegrass is.
Right, know? Right,
and,
yeah.
And so it's a tiny thing. We have bluegrass awards, like we have, you know, national banjo guitar contests and those kind of things.
Uh-huh.
But it's not a huge business, but it's something that people do love. But I feel like it's something you have to, you know, you have to come over here and find it. You know, it's real hard to find lots of bluegrass in Australia.
Yeah. Are there festivals that promote it?
There are a couple of festivals that are really great, actually, and I feel like there are more and more coming up at the moment. I feel like there's a bit of a resurgence for organic, sort of rootsy acoustic music in all forms, whether it be folk or
sure.
Americana or certainly bluegrass as well. And there are a couple of really great little festivals that happen that occasionally will bring some great American artists over and people from around the world. And that's really great, but I do think it's growing in Australia. And I think, you know, when I started listening to bluegrass, there was no internet. There was, you know,
basically,
I had to order a vinyl record, you know, from the States, and it could take up to 6 months to arrive back then.
Really? Wow.
And, you know, now I look at my son, who's a great young guitarist, who, you know, he wants to learn something. He's on YouTube in 2 seconds, and he knows it in half an hour. I'm like, you don't know how lucky you are.
Yeah.
But it's really cool. But yeah, it was very different back then. But I think that the, you know, just the accessibility of everything online has made it easier for us to feel a part of that whole bluegrass scene, I guess.
Yeah, right. What was your first entry into performing bluegrass music professionally?
Well, professionally, you know, in 1985, I came to America for 4 months, and I just, I'd won the Australian banjo and guitar contest for, I think, 3 years in a row from 1982 to 85, and we have this, like, gentleman's agreement over if you win 3 years, then you sit back. So after 1985, I bowed out and actually became a judge for quite a few years on that event. But so in 1985, I hopped in on a plane and came over to America to go to the, you know, just to travel around. I just wanted to go to as many bluegrass festivals as I could.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that was kind of the moment for me that really went, yeah, this is what I love. This is the music that's really, you know, gets me going. And I went to places like, you know, obviously I've been to Telluride a few times,
yeah.
Lucky enough to play there a few times, and ended up in Winfield, Kansas for the Nationals in 85, which was awesome. But I also did a Tennessee State Contest. I did the West Virginia Contest, the Colorado State Contest, the Rocky Mountain Contest, lots of things. So I had been lucky enough to hook up with Ohm Banjos out of Boulder in Colorado. And just going back, I'd mentioned that I was a Carl Jackson, am a Carl Jackson fan, and I'd noticed in some, 1980 Fretz magazine that he had an Ohm Banjo, and so I contacted Ohm Banjos, and this was in about 1981,
okay.
And said, hey, look, I'd love to buy a banjo, and they sent me a catalog in the mail, and this used to take months, each of these correspondents would take a few months.
Yeah.
And so I remember Chuck Oxbury, who owns Ohm Banjos, sent me a letter and a catalog that looked really good, and turned out that, this particular banjo I wanted, of course, was the top of the range, and it was like $5,500 US.
Yeah.
And at the time, I was this broke young musician, and I just wrote back and said, okay, well, that looks great. I've just won the Australian Banjo Contest. I wonder, is there any kind of deal you might want to do? And he was great. He said, why don't you send me a photo and a tape and a bio and stuff, So
yeah.
I remember I made a cassette tape back then and just put down a guitar track and then some banjo on a few tunes and sent it over to him. And then he wrote back and said, yeah, look, we'd love to make you a banjo. And so I became their kind of second endorsee, after Carl Jackson. So when I came to America in 85, I wanted to get to Boulder in Colorado. He offered to come stay and hang out. So I came over to there and then just basically used Boulder as a bit of a base and then took off all over America to visit whatever bluegrass festivals we could get to. And it was just such an incredible... I'd never heard bluegrass up close and personal like that before.
Wow.
At that level,
you can be
at Winfield, Kansas, and be at a picking, campfire, late night picking session, and Mark O'Connor or Sam Bush walking, that kind of thing. It was like hearing those guys up close. It just made everything make sense to me,
Yeah. Yeah, and I really appreciate and respect that about the bluegrass industry, because it's still that way. You still can go to a festival and after a band's performance, see one or all of the guys walking around, looking for something to eat or just meeting and greeting the folks. And yeah, it's really nice that way.
And I love that about this music, that everybody in it is so down to earth. I mean, I don't know many people who took up bluegrass music because they, had dollar signs in their eyes. I think it's something that we all fall in love with.
Yeah.
And you play it because you can't not,
Right. Yeah. The family atmosphere of it is so attractive.
Totally.
Yeah.
Absolutely right. Yeah.
When you have traveled to the States to play in the past, has it been from a solo perspective, or do you bring a band with you, or put a band together when you get here? How does that work for you?
Well, for me, in the past, I've not had the opportunity to do this as much as I'm doing right now, because, as I mentioned, for years I was just a producer of music for other people,
uh-huh.
and when I came here, I was normally a musical director for somebody or another, and I was putting bands together and sometimes bringing musicians, but about a year ago, I decided I really wanted to make my own records, some of my own music, and that just instantly turned into a bluegrass record. Really, it's just I wanted to do something that I really love and would still love to listen to. I'd written these songs and didn't want to just put them in the drawer and never listen to them again.
Yeah.
So this time around, coming over here, I've traveled over here just with my wife and my son, but I've got some incredible musicians who are joining me. So, and I feel like it's so fortunate, like where we start playing on this week, and in the band we have guys like Stuart Duncan on fiddle.
Oh, great.
Andy Leftwich and Dave Pomeroy on upright bass.
Yeah. Justin
Moses on dobro and it's like, and Casey Campbell's playing some of the shows as well, and it's like, that's pretty fortunate,
way
I look at it, To me, those guys are kind of my musical heroes,
Right.
So to get to spend time in the studio with them and then to go out and play live with them, that's just a treat.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Did I read where you had a connection with the band, the Green Cards? Were you part of them?
Yeah, that's true. I toured with those guys for a couple of years. So the Green Cards are an odd combination of a couple of Australians, Kim Warner and Carol Young, and they eventually moved from Australia over to the States. And back in those days in Australia, Kim was a well-known young player, and I worked with him lots. In fact, I'm still, you know, great mates with his dad as well, who's also a great musician. In fact, pretty much, I think, is one of the three guys who really brought bluegrass music back into Australia way back when in the 60s, you know, like when I was, you know, started thinking about it, he'd already been over here picking with Bill Monroe.
Yeah. Know?
And so Kim had that kind of grounding, and Carol was a young singer in the country scene back then in Australia. In fact, I produced her first record, and then her and Kim became a couple, and they just were just totally all about bluegrass and acoustic music. And
yeah.
They came over here and hooked up with an odd combination. He's an Irish fiddle player who grew up mainly in London, in England, and these days he's in the Opry band and playing with Rodney Crowell, but that's Eamon McLaughlin on the fiddle.
Yeah,
and,
wow.
And so they were a great combo, and they were recording over here and still doing bunches of touring. And so they'd fly me over to tour through the States with them, or to Europe a couple of times we did, and Australia, of course, in different places. So, yeah, I got to play all over the States with those guys, which was really good fun.
Yeah. Were you with them when they played at Merlefest? Were you part of the group then?
No, I didn't make Merlefest, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah, lots of other things, lots of different festivals, but not that one. I'd love to go to Melfest one day. It's one of those ones on my list I've never been to.
Yeah, it's definitely one to try to make sure you get to. It's a lot of fun,
That is the plan, for sure.
Yeah. So the new record is Fingerprints. Is this your first bluegrass record, or have there been others?
It's actually my first solo record, full stop. I've never made a record for myself.
Okay.
So, Of course, it's my first bluegrass record, and so much fun to make. And I was kind of listening to all my favorite Tony Rice records, and I used to listen to it and think, well, he had these, you know, two guitar parts, and I always wondered, sounds like he probably played his first part in the track live with the band, and then he probably overdubbed the solos or something like that. It was hard to know. I'd love to ask him that question one day if I ever get to meet him. And they were such amazing records. They still are. I still listen to them all the time. And so I wanted to do something similar, but what I decided to do was we had songs and basically put down like the rhythm part prior to playing with the band, so that when we all sat around in a room and played live together, I could get to play all the fun parts, you know.
Yeah.
and that's what we did, and literally the whole album was like 1.5 days of recording,
with
the band. And it's just so fun in that setting, and so good to hear these amazing musicians who just bring songs to life in such a beautiful way.
And will you, I'm presuming that your time here, part of that will be able to play out with some of this music?
Yeah, you bet. Well, I'm getting lucky enough to get to play at the IBMA.
Yeah.
And for me, another dream is to get to play at the Station Inn and launch the record, which is really, really cool.
That's awesome.
And so, yeah, with those guys who played on the record all coming down to play. So that's just, as I said, such a treat. And yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to it.
And the record is available now for folks to pick up?
Yeah, it actually comes out Friday, September 20th. So, yeah.
Oh, this week. Okay. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Awesome. This week. Yeah. Cool. And where can people pick it up? All the normal places? Or can they get in touch with you if they want to find out where you're going to be while you're here?
Yeah, they can do either way. So it's available through Sonic Timber Records, which is distributed through worldwide through MGM Distribution. So it should be in all of, you know, anywhere you want to order it, should be able to.
Okay.
Obviously, you can download it on all of your favorite digital aggregators like iTunes or Spotify or whatever. And of course, you can go to my website, which is rodmccormack.com. And there's links there for ordering and all kinds of things. many options.
Yeah, good. Well, I certainly hope folks get a chance to hear it and catch you while you're here. And I sure look forward to getting to meet you in person at IBMA here in about a week. And so
and
we'll get a chance to hear you live, too, there, too. So wish you best on this tour, and I look forward to how that does for you. And I'm sure it's going to be a great album for you for your career.
Thank you so much, Greg. I appreciate it.
Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.